Hello, and welcome to Jat Chat, presented by the Journal of Athletic Training, the official journal of the National Athletic Trainers Association. I'm Dr. Kara Radzak, the assistant professor in the School of Integrated Health Sciences at UNLV, and your host for today. The purpose of today's event is to provide an open forum for athletic trainers and other healthcare professionals to ask questions and discuss the recently published summary statement on appropriate medical care standards for organizations sponsoring athletic activity for secondary school aged athletes in this month's Journal of Athletic Training. Today, I am joined by two authors and members of the task force for the summary. Mr. Larry Cooper is a past chair of the NATA's Secondary School Athletic Trainers Committee, member of the Corey Stringer Institute's Medical and Science Advisory Board, and the NATA District 2's secretary. He is no stranger to the secondary school setting, having spent 35 years with the majority of his time at Penn Trafford High School in Harrison City, Pennsylvania. I'm also pleased to be joined by Dr. Tamara Balovich McLeod, the Director of Athletic Training Programs at A.T. Still University, and the John P. Wood Endowed Chair for Sports Medicine. To make today work as smoothly as possible, we ask that you submit your questions in the Facebook Live comment section or as a tweet at JAT_NATA using the hashtag JATChat, all one word. At this point in time, I would like to introduce Larry and Tamara. Thank you so much for taking your time to speak with me today.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thanks for having us.
So the first thing that I want to ask is, can you give us a little bit of background information? Tell us about the goal that the task force had.
The task force was formed to evaluate and update the previous appropriate medical care document that was written in 2002, and Tamara was part of that as well. And we were charged by the board to evaluate it, see if it needed updated, and then also to develop an online assessment tool that would accompany it and help a organization or a school look at their current practices and see how they could elevate it or improve it.
Yeah, I think that, it's along the same lines of what the pronouncements committee does with position statements and reviewing them in 10-year increments or so. Mm-hmm. In this case, the appropriate medical care for secondary school aged athletes was published in 2004. And so it was time for an update, especially considering a lot of new consensus and position statements directing athletic training practice in a number of areas have been published since that time.
And what were the biggest updates or changes from the last document?
There were 67 new documents put out by just the NATA, consensus statements. Help me out here, Tamara. What were some of the others?
Position statements, some of the official documents, and we've seen over the years higher level of athletic training research being published in journals like the Journal of Athletic Training that can really have higher levels of evidence to make recommendations on practice. So, for example, a lot of what's been done with heat illness has really kind of upped our level of practice and allowed us to ensure that we know that some practices like cold water immersion, rectal temperature are the best way to go. And it's important that those types of advancements are put into the document like this to ensure best practices.
Y'all had a lot of material to work with then.
Yeah. And just think about concussions, how things have changed just in the past 5 years. You know, the 2002 document till now really changed dramatically with concussions.
What was the professional makeup of the task force? Who all was involved?
So myself at the secondary school setting, Ronnie Harper, he's in a high school setting. He worked previously at a collegiate front as well. He's out of Louisiana. George Wham, who works at a secondary school and is also a researcher out of South Carolina. Jason Cates from Arkansas. He's just an absolute amazing advocate for secondary school athletic training. Tom Dompierre from Lebanon Valley College, who is a researcher. Randy Cohen from University of Arizona, who was involved in the original AMCIA document for NCAA athletics. Bob Huggins from Corey Stringer Institute, who is also a researcher. Dan Newman from Union High School in Oklahoma. Bart Peterson, the current chair of the secondary school committee, is a secondary school athletic trainer out in Arizona. Dr. McLeod, who is a researcher and educator. And then Scott Chafin, who is a lawyer who helped us find some case law studies. So that was the makeup. And we tried to get people that were really had a good background in secondary school athletic training and organizational athletics, and be able to use some of the knowledge from the previous document and the AMCIA document and not make the same mistakes.
So you guys definitely had a good mix of clinicians and researchers. And one of the things that was interesting to me when I was reading the summary statement was that addition of the case law. Can you tell me a little bit about how did this shape the summary statement and more resources regarding case law for athletic trainers?
I think one thing it really did, and I applaud the NATA Board of Directors for allowing us to have some autonomy and bring this in as a first in any type of document, was the ability to have stakeholders now see the importance of developing or going through these standards and trying to elevate their level of athletic health care. It gives a reason why it's important. We never had that before in any type of document that the NATA put out. And Tamara, if you would like to add to that, because you were involved with the first one too.
Yeah, and in the first document, I think we were able to find a couple of published cases that would add to the support or provide some additional advocacy for the needs for some of the recommendations. But having an attorney who's very familiar with case law and who had resources beyond our group as a task force was certainly important in improving the quality of the evidence. And I think sometimes stories speak louder than research. And so seeing actual cases where athletes were impacted because of either athletic healthcare services not being provided or not provided to what we would consider the standard of care sometimes speaks louder than presenting numerous meta-analyses and systematic reviews, because it brings that real world element in. And part of this document is to ensure that athletic trainers know how to protect themselves by having good policies in place. And the case law speaks to that as well.
So in that same avenue, how can a practicing athletic trainer at a secondary school setting use this document, and what other resources have come with this document for them?
Well, that's a long question. Hopefully I don't take up too much time here, because I know there's other questions, but what it does is it gives the athletic trainer, whether it be an organization or in a school, the ability to go back and review all of their policies and procedures to see if they're actually following best practices, if they're actually following what the NATA and what this task force has determined is to be appropriate medical care. Mm-hmm. Each standard, and there's 12 standards, they have substandards. And within that, it gives a synopsis of why it's important. It gives resources and references. It gives examples. It might be a checklist. It also gives a case law. So what we've done, and this was one of our goals, is to make it a one-stop shop. If you don't know where to start, we give examples. We give resources and references for you to start on that particular standard, whether it be an emergency action plan if you've never had one. We give examples. We give you references and resources to go and actually get started on them. And also, this is really important. the person who starts it in the organization has the ability to invite other stakeholders. It might be a physician, it might be a principal, it might be the CEO of the organization, it might be your athletic director, whoever you want. And now they can go in and look and see what policies and procedures you should work on. And the other part of that stakeholder involvement is, we all know that if I go to the maintenance and I say, well, we need to have a written policy on cleaning of the athletic training facility, they, you know, they kind of laugh. Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that for you. And leave the room, and they probably forget all about it. But if your principal is a stakeholder involved, and he sees that you need to have that, he sends an email or visits with the head of maintenance, it's mm-hmm. more likely to get done. And we have to, as athletic trainers, realize we don't have to do everything ourselves. We've always done that. But this particular document gets other stakeholders involved to help elevate that level of athletic care.
And I think the other thing it can do is provide opportunities for quality improvement initiatives. We wouldn't expect any athletic trainer to probably have every single standard and substandard right away. Okay. But it allows you to look to see what's the lay of the land at your school and what can be done better, and allow you to kind of work on things, you know, in smaller chunks to improve, you know, different things at different times of the year. It can help school districts maybe work together and share the burden of policy development, where they come up with a standard for their district that can be shared. But I think it really needs to be looked at as an opportunity for improving athletic healthcare services at the secondary school level.
So when you're talking about the athletic trainer going on and sharing access to administrators and other key stakeholders, are you talking about the toolkit that's available?
Yes.
So tell us more about the toolkit and where can we access it?
It's also on the NATA website, NATA/PASS. And that PASS stands for Program Assessment for Safety in Sports. And it is the online assessment tool that you invite your stakeholders, has all the standards and substandards. And what it does is it allows you to go through at your time. Mm-hmm. And we've actually gone around to all the NATA districts, and we've suggested that you take one standard per month. There's 12 standards, take a year. And we're being realistic there, because standard one is all about an athlete's readiness to participate in athletics. Most of that's already done. But standard two is practice and competition and athletic healthcare facilities, as well as equipment, are safe and clean. And the substandards, you've got to get other stakeholders involved that you normally wouldn't be in, you know, working with or collaborating with. So it might take longer than a month to get that done. So we were being realistic where it should take a month per standard at minimum.
And for the educators who are listening in, the way that the PASS is somewhat set up, it reminds me a little of EACRED, which we are using for our educational programs, where you've got kind of the narrative that describes how you're meeting a standard, as well as uploading documents to support that standard. And so it's laid out somewhat similarly, that the athletic trainer could upload their PPE forms to demonstrate that they're meeting that particular standard.
And who sees this information that you upload?
That's a great question. And that's something that we had to be cognizant of when we developed this. The only person who sees that is you and the people that you assign as being stakeholders. Mm-hmm. No one else looks at that. You're not getting a grade. No one else looks at it. It's you. That's it. Nobody else.
Is there any incentive, or is this going to be used for the Safe School initiatives?
Well, there's been some discussion that, you know, they're very similar. I actually think this is probably a little bit more stringent than the Safe Sports School Award. But, you know, the two, we have a suggestion at the end, if you complete PASS, you should go and look at the Safe Sports School Award, because you've met all their standards. And we're hoping that the Safe Sports School Award does the same thing. if you reach all of those standards, they would in turn send you over to PASS and encourage you to complete PASS.
So we're talking a lot about things that athletic trainers can do and tools and resources for them. But I would imagine that most of the people that really need this do not have an athletic trainer working with their secondary school. What's the plan, if there is any, to get this information rolled out to administrators and other key stakeholders?
Bart Peterson and myself, we went around all the districts and spoke. We've also put a plan in to the NFHS to speak to the state administrators, athletic administrators. And there's obviously a lot of athletic directors attend that meeting, and we're trying to get on their docket, do the same presentation, show them the importance of this document and the online assessment tool so that they can go back to their state and encourage all of their athletic organizations, all their athletic departments to actually take part in this PASS. So whether that happens or not, we haven't received word, but you know, that's one of our goals. The NATA has a plan, a promotional plan in place right now. And there should be an article in USA Today coming up soon. Obviously, we have it at your own risk blog. Mm-hmm. And there's also the social media. There was an article in the NATA News in July. There was a Facebook Live account document for the secondary school athletic trainers that spoke about it, but it's going out to athletic administrators. That's something that we need to work on probably a little bit better in the coming months.
And Tamara, how do you recommend educators integrating this into working with those that are in an athletic training program?
Sure. I think at minimum, the summary statement, and I would argue the accompanying monograph that is much longer and more detailed, is a required reading, because that's going to hit on a lot of best practices in a number of different areas. In addition, I think if there's ways where students, while they're on their clinical immersives or even some of their shorter rotations, are able to work with the secondary school athletic trainer preceptor, get an idea of whether or not they are using PASS. And if so, kind of walk the student through some of what they're doing to highlight how they're using it. I think there could be a lot of different activities, looking at document uploads and what types of documents might be important. Because I think a lot of times students are coming out of both professional and post-professional programs and taking a lot of jobs in the secondary school setting, and there's not really that mentoring. So I think there needs to be at least identification and demonstration of the PASS program, as well as familiarization with the document for all professional and post-professional programs.
Yeah, you have tools.
Yes.
Out there.
Yeah.
So, Tamara, do you think we should actually look at presenting at ATEP?
I think it would be a great avenue to ensure that educators are familiar that this resource is available. And if they have not gone in it or have had the ability to look at it, that they find a way to work with their preceptors to share the information with their students. I think it's definitely an important topic that educators should be aware of and should be sharing with their students.
Now, you mentioned the monograph. What is the monograph entail, and where can you access this?
Yeah, the monograph is available on the NATA's website in the secondary school section. And it is basically the extended version, I guess you could say, of what we have in the summary statement. In the summary statement, we really just hit on the narratives for each of the primary standards and listed the questions for the substandards. In the monograph, it goes into a lot more detail about with an annotation for each of the substandards, as well as resource documents that athletic trainers can use to help them work through the standards. And so it's certainly a lot more detailed. It's a very similar process as we did with the initial document back in 2002, 2004, where we had a very large document that was too large to publish in the journal, that was housed on the website, and then the summary statement so that, you know, we've got greater access to it.
Thanks for providing Cliff Notes.
Well, it's 70 pages. So one thing that I forgot to mention, I think this is really a really important part of this, is once you upload the documents for an organization or for a school, it stays with that organization. So, for example, I'm at Penn Trafford High School and I leave. The level of care should remain the same with the new person coming in, because they access PASS. They have all those documents right there. And we've never had that before. How many athletic trainers have gone out for a new position, a new school, or a new organization, and they have to start from scratch and do everything? So this really should provide that level of athletic health care across the board. It's much higher than what we're currently getting.
That is a good resource. That was my experience in my first secondary school job, was ending up saying, okay, bits and pieces, here we go. Was there anything that came up in the recommendations that you guys personally thought, hey, I never thought about it that way, or it gave you a new perspective to something that was common practice in your mind, but having it written was great?
Tamara, I'll let you go first.
Okay. I think from my standpoint, the standard regarding mental health and psychological aspect, obviously with concussion and the work that we've done with health-related quality of life, that's been a kind of a pet issue of mine. But to see a standard in writing that really focuses on the role of the athletic trainer in recognizing and referring, and ultimately being a part of a team at that school or within that organization that has a plan to handle mental health emergencies and student athletes who might need some of that assistance. So to really understand and see that, I thought was important to have the standards and substandards in that area, because it is a very important part of our job, especially in some of the secondary school settings where the athletic trainer is likely the only healthcare provider that some of the students interact with regularly.
Right.
Right. And I would agree wholeheartedly with what Tamara said. But I also felt like one of the things that we had to balance and be very aware of is we did not want to follow the AMCIA document. It wasn't very well received when it was put out. It seemed to be self-serving and that. So we had a lot of pushback. And we also knew that there are some schools around the country. One in Texas, I know, had 8 full-time athletic trainers. And if you go ahead and put a formula in there, it might have said that they only need 6. Mm-hmm. And so what we didn't want to do is put people out of jobs. What we wanted them to do is be able to look at this document and determine how many athletic trainers they needed to provide appropriate medical care. And so we had to be cognizant of the entire time. And I think we did a pretty good job of keeping that in the back of our mind at all times, and not just throwing a formula out there that would have potentially taken jobs away rather than add.
Yeah. So one of the questions from the audience is, what are the barriers most common to implementation that you have heard from clinicians?
Probably they don't understand. The administrators don't understand our skill set or our scope of practice. Mm-hmm. So that's where probably the biggest amount of resistances, they just don't understand. So I think what it does is it gives the opportunity to collaborate with an administrator for them to understand our skill set and the value that we provide for an organization or school. And it becomes now actually, you know, two-faced, where we not only provide a better athletic health care, but we also provide a better working environment for us as an athletic trainer.
And I would also say that when looking at the document and the toolkit for the first time, time is probably going to be the biggest barrier. I think that people will acknowledge, just because a lot of times we hear athletic trainers talking about, you know, there's not enough hours in the day. There's so much going on. And I guess my response to that would be, this is part of our responsibility as an athletic trainer. If you look at healthcare administration and our domain of professional development. And I think sometimes spending a little bit of time working on policies, getting them into pass, is probably better use of the athletic trainer's time than them sitting out at tennis practice when, you know, the risk of injury is very low. And so I think allowing opportunity, some administrative release time, if they can argue for that, to be able to spend on this. The other thing I would suggest to help overcome that barrier is for the athletic trainer to get with the school or the district's legal counsel or risk management folks. Because I think if you have them on board regarding the need and the importance of having these policies in place, you've got a very strong advocate who should help skid any of the resistance that you might have from other folks on other stakeholders or folks at the school.
So, Tamara, you kind of just started on answering a question that an audience member has, but let's get into it a little bit more. So the question is, what stakeholders do you think are most important early in the process of implementing PASS in a new environment? Who should the members of this first team be?
So if I could answer that, Tamara,
yeah.
I think it's real important to get your athletic director and your principal and your school physician, your cooperating physician involved from the very get-go. But it also depends on your employment setting. If you're a clinical outreach and you have a clinical supervisor, you're going to have to get them involved too. So they can actually help you when they come out to meet with the administrators and maybe talk about your contract or, you know, how things go on. They can actually help, facilitate some of that change as well. So some of it depends on your employment method, but I think for one, you should get your athletic director, your principal, and your cooperating physician involved for sure.
Anybody else to add other than the legal team?
Yeah, I would say the school nurse, perhaps, if you have access to a school nurse. I know their employment models vary just as much as athletic trainers, but that would certainly be someone who could assist. And I think sometimes when we don't have that good communication between the nurse and the athletic trainer might know that some policies actually already exist at the school, that they don't need to reinvent the wheel. They can, modify some of those other health policies or just directly use them. And so I think the nurse would be another good stakeholder.
Absolutely.
Okay. How can an athletic trainer use this document to advocate for additional support in their schools, thinking about negotiating with administrators?
Well, I think that's one of the nice things about having a stakeholder involved. You have your principal or you have your AD involved. And your physician, what can happen is they can see, Tamara can't do all this. There's only one Tamara, but we have three sites of athletic events. Mm-hmm. So if we have a football game, a JV football game, and we have a girls soccer game, and then we have a cross country meet with five teams, and they're all at different venues, the athletes that are working with soccer, they deserve athletic healthcare just as much as anybody else. So when they see, we're putting people at risk by not having an athletic trainer there, they get to see there's no formula, but they can say, maybe we should start thinking about adding another person or two people. So that stakeholder involvement, I think, is going to be critical for the increase in the number of athletic trainers hired.
And to add to that, if the athletic trainer was also able to pull from their own documentation about the types of injuries that happened at some of those events that they were not able to cover, mm-hmm. that would bolster the argument. So they've already got the stakeholder's ear, they've got the best practice recommendations, and they have their own data from their site. That would be very hard to argue against, I think, from a lot of different perspectives. And that would put them in a good position to hopefully advocate for an additional athletic training position.
Great. Thank you. Are there similar documents being generated for collegiate or middle school settings?
Well, that's really interesting that you say that. This is for secondary school age athletes, so it is appropriate for middle school.
Okay.
And we've also I can't remember what the name of the committee is now, but the old collegiate athletic trainers committee, they are actually looking at parts of this to try and incorporate into the collegiate setting as well. So, I think that's probably in the next year or so.
Great. And wrapping up, sticking on this document, what are the next steps? What is there any plan to update this work in the future?
Yes. We have already started talking on 2.1, 2.0. We have already seen things that we probably need to include to make it a better document, a better working, living, breathing document, and improve the pass as well. So, yeah, we are constantly taking notes, and I'm sure at some point in time within the next year, we'll have a version 2.1.
So if any of the clinicians out there are using the PASS and they have difficulties or they think that there's something that could be improved, what's our course of action to get that information to you guys?
They're more than happy to email me, no problem at all. I'd be happy to take that and incorporate it into the next version.
Great. So anything else y'all would like our viewers and listeners to know or reemphasize before we sign off today?
I think the biggest thing is to take it one step at a time. It can be daunting and overwhelming to look at any document. This document in and of itself includes portions of numerous position statements. And I know sometimes when those are published, they seem overwhelming and they're very specific to one particular topic. Mm-hmm. I would also say, don't think you have to do it on your own. Look who else within your organization or your team can assist with parts of it. If you work in a school district or are fortunate to have other local athletic trainers, see how other people are doing it, and don't reinvent the wheel. Learn from each other, share documents, use the resources that are provided. The members of the work group shared some of their own documents for different standards, pulled things from folks that they knew. So it's not about having to do it all on your own. It's trying to be smart about going through the PASS program and trying to meet the standards.
I would agree wholeheartedly with what Tamara said. I forgot to mention one thing, and I think this is really important, that you can share parts of your documentation that you've uploaded to PASS, and meaning, for example, the emergency action plan. Tamara's coming to Penn Trafford and she knows Friday night, she's never been here, she would like to see a copy of our emergency action plan. She can go in PASS and request access to my emergency action plan, and I can share it to her for however long I want, whether it be 3 days or 1 day or a week or a month or however. And the nice feature about that is you could also use that for collaboration too. Say, say if Tamara is working on the emergency action plan at her school and she'd just like to see what we have at Penn Trafford, then she can go in, I can give her access, and then she can collaborate with people in her setting, in her particular organization, and develop that with some help from what I've already done. So again, you can, like Tamara said, you don't have to do it all on your own. This is an opportunity to collaborate and just elevate the level of healthcare that we provide for secondary school age athletes across the country.
Great. Thank you guys so much. It sounds like a phenomenal living document and a great resource for all of us, everybody that works in a secondary school setting, and to see where this goes in the future is going to be really exciting. Thank you guys so much for joining me today. We'll be sure to provide links to the toolkit and the pass especially, so all the viewers can get access to that vital information. Thank you again to Mara and Larry so much for joining me today, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Thank you, yeah, thank you for the opportunity to have us.